welcome to the Voice of the Force podcast for some more High Republic? Question mark. Yeah, we're doing phase two, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Ed.
Hello.
And Noma.
Hello there.
How are you guys doing today?
Doing pretty good.
Things are moving.
And full belly.
Yeah, some Jabba the Hutt up in here.
Limo gata mito woo.
But we are covering some phase two. Ed, would you like to let listeners know what we're covering today?
Yes, we're discussing the events of the High Republic. Path of is one of the first books, if not the first book of phase two. That came out at an odd time when phase two wasn't really phase two yet. So the plan is everywhere. We're planning something and the dragons are coming. We just, trust me, the dragons are coming. They're going to be there, all right? They're coming. Phase two in the High Republic. Everything's going to make sense. We promise. Maybe.
We promise, maybe.
We're going to discuss what happened in this novel. And based on what it tells us, you know, what may happen, what we can speculate, how does it tie into. One, were there any Easter eggs? How many did we find? Honestly, how long we'll go for with High Republic. And I mean, we'll do our very best. We always promise to do our very best. High Republic really tests limits. Now, just to give you the breakdown, since this is the start of phase two, it's phase one started with the Light of the Jedi.
Solid intro.
This is 150 years before that. So we are now 350 years before. Is it confusing? Yes. Why'd they do this? We don't know. There's a plan. There's always a plan. There's some kind of plan. So we'll go into it and everything that happens in this 150 years that leads up to Light of the Jedi, we'll see how much sense it makes. Hopefully it makes a lot of sense and gives more credence as to why they did it. But for now, this is what we're covering today. If there's anything that you want to mention about this book, or if you've seen or heard any other news about why they went 150 years into the past rather than going forward, please feel free to contact us. There's many ways to do so. Noma's going to give you a rundown right now, and then if there's anything you don't catch, we will repeat all this at the end of the episode.
Absolutely. So yeah, one of the easiest ways to contact us, email, which is voiceoftheforce@gmail.com. Social media wise, we're on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. The handle for all three of those is @VoiceForcePod. As always, retweeting and reposting our new episode tweets, it does help with growing a listener base and is very much appreciated.
You can note, our Threads account is probably pretty much dead at this moment. We don't ever go on it.
And
so,
So
just a heads up, if you message us on Threads, we probably didn't see it.
Yeah. This is very fair. You can also listen, rate, review, follow, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and all major podcast platforms. Giving us a 5-star as a comment helps with visibility, and you can subscribe for free for the latest episode as soon as it releases. And finally, we are streaming on Twitch still. That is twitch.tv/voiceforcegaming. We've been super appreciative of everyone who's swinging by, following, giving us those good vibes either by lurking around or, you know, talking with us during our streams. We're very excited because we have just recently reached affiliate status. And as of this recording, that includes one channel rewards point that is outside of the normal and two free emotes. And I'm going to be hoping that I get the third one done by next week. All I'm going to say is it's going to be the most cursed of all of them, but I'm really excited to see what people think of it. Yeah, outside of all of that information, if you are interested in watching our stream, there are 3 days that we are currently streaming. The first is Tuesday at 10 p.m. EST. Me and my VTuber friend, Roomba friend, are still doing our Elden Ring co-op playthrough. We have currently just reached Dark Souls Hogwarts, also known as the Academy of Raya Lucaria, where I embarrassed myself quite thoroughly. But, you know, we can only go up from here, quite literally, physically, all those kinds of things. So if you want to see two people stumbling through Elden Ring, you can join us there. On Fridays at 6 p.m. EST, I am doing Star Wars Arma, which is like a military simulator, with the 91st Mobile Reconnaissance Force. Doing some fun times there in the tank division, Beskar. Last week, or not last week, this week, we had a pretty fun operation where I got smacked a lot. We had a very rough landing. It was like the landing at Point Rain, just repeated over and over again, basically. So that was fun and terrifying. But yeah, and then on Saturdays, we are just about to wrap up. At 3 p.m. EST, we are playing Star Wars Empire at War with me controlling and Ed and Dan commentating and just having a good time with everybody. Like I said, we're on our last week of that. I don't know when this will come out, but we will hopefully have a VOD of it at the very least, because I'm going to beat the game and then crank the difficulty up to 150 and then see how long I can hold out before I just get like kicked in the teeth until I am on the ground crying. That'll be an interesting adventure. But yeah, after that, we will be switching to a mystery game. Ed knows what it is because he mentioned it, and I said I know how to play it, so I'm down to show him. But I'm very excited to see what Dan's going to think of it. It's an interesting game. It's a very, very different game than a Star Wars one. But
interesting.
Very in-depth. I'll be explaining a lot of the mechanics in case anybody is interested in learning how to play it. But yeah, hopefully it'll be a good time. And speaking of our Twitch stuff, I was also floating the idea today of for like 10,000 channel points or something, basically recommending a game that as long as it's not going to get us banned off Twitch, you know, we can play at least for a week and see how we think.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah, fun stuff like that.
And I'm playing some strange games, man.
You know,
I mean,
I think maybe
we don't get banned.
Maybe giving them like a 3-hour minimum on the game. And then you can decide if you want to continue it or not.
Yeah, well, I mean, a 3-hour minimum would be,
so. Oh, that's true. That is true. Like that.
Yeah, we hope to see you there because it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly. No, I am super excited to see what game your guys are cooking up here. It'll be fun. But with that said,
just as much death as Empire at War.
Yeah, exactly. With that said, if you have not read this book, I would stop the podcast here in a moment once I've done the spoiler warning. But also go back and listen to the phase one stuff that we covered, because yes, this is 150 years prior to that, but that's going to give you some context as to some stuff that happens in this book. So you'll have a little bit more understanding. So go do that. And if you're not interested in doing that, then just maybe go read this book and then come back and listen to us. But with that said, this is your spoiler warning now done. Let's get into the synopsis and credits of this book.
All right, so as we said, this is Star Wars, The Path of Deceit. The authors are Tessa Grattan and Justina Ireland. The cover artist is Corey Brickley. And if you're listening to it on Audible, the narrator is Erin Yvette. And she does a very good job of this. Not that I'm already going to show my hand, but the narration was definitely like the most enticing part of this book. I really liked how he does all the voices, how at a certain point, if any of the main characters were talking, just off her voice, I could tell who they were, even if their names weren't said. Yeah, it's just, it's a very, very good audiobook. I highly recommend it. Now, there's a hyper short synopsis that I can give. And the hyper short synopsis is that The Path of Deceit is all about us seeing how the Nihil are descended from a Force cult. That's basically it. That is the long and short of what this book is all about. Not the long and short. This is the short of how this of what this book is about. The long, which I've got a couple of problems with because of how we're doing this, but I'll talk about that afterwards, is we stick with a core cast of characters. They're basically like the good guys and they're pretending to be good guys, but it's very clear they're bad guys. So the good guys, quote, are Kevmo Zink, who is a Pantoran Padawan, his master Zala Makri, who is a Zoikin Jedi Knight, who I had to look up what that species was, because I did not remember based off the descriptions what they looked like. And then when I looked them up, I went, isn't this just a Pantoran?
Yep.
And so that was kind of interesting. They're very, very similar, is the at least physically. They do go into some ways that they're different, and I was very it did seem very cool to me what the differences were. Because what's weird about Zala is that she's basically described as having like white hair, silver skin, lilac eyes. And then if you look at some of the pictures, it almost looks like diamond or like fish scales. That was kind of neat. But anyways, so that Master Padawan duo. And then there's another Jedi, Aslan Rel, but he's only in the beginning and the end. And then we've got the Path of the Open Hand, which is basically the prequel Nihil. So in that one, we've got the main big bad, who Alicia Zevron. She's known as the mother to the Path of the Open Hand. And she's got, like, a right-hand man is a Natolan called Worth, known as the Herald. He's interesting because they talk about how, even though he's a Natolan, like Kit Fisto, all of his tendrils have been, like, shorn away because of some, like, early childhood violence, something or other. Then we get to two characters who are interesting mostly because we already know the genetic line of one of them. So it's two cousins. The older cousin is Yana Ro. And then there's her younger cousin, Marta Ro. And through, I believe it was the Martian Ro comics, we already know that Marta Ro is basically going to end up being the, like, I think it's like great, great, great grandmother of Martian.
I was going to say, do you recognize the last name?
Yeah, right. Like, it's not very subtle.
No, not at all.
And I can't remember. Yeah, I think it was the Martian Ro comic. We do get like a lot of the kind of reinforced backstory from that comic about how the Evereni are like despised and outcasts and totally not a gypsy allegory. But that's the main cast. The main thing that we learn about is that the Path of the Open Hand is a hardline force adherent cult that believes that if anybody uses the force, they're damaging it. Which I think is based off of a different legacy force. I can't remember who it was a monk order, but I remember there being a monk order in Legends who also believed that the Jedi and Sith were both equal were both equally evil because if you use the force, you're hurting it by exhausting it. And in this one, it's that if you use the force in one way, you're gonna harm someone in the other. It's almost akin to the lessons that Kreia goes over in KOTOR 2, but it's like less. I think of a nicer way to say it than like less like focused within an actual reality. Because they're just like, yeah, if you use the force, it's evil, because it might be. Okay, that's some really solid logic there. But yeah, so we learned that like while the main Path of the Open Hand are all these kind of like peace-loving, insanely pacifist, basically cultists, the mother has this group called the Children. That's what Yana is part of with her girlfriend and the, I think, first scumbag Mickian I remember seeing. Because he really is just kind of like a gross person. But as far as I can't remember seeing another like evil-ish Mickian. I don't know about you guys. I think the only ones we see are the two Clone Wars generals. And then...
No, because they're not that they're rare or anything, it's just like we don't get a lot of depictions. They'll show them like once and be like, all right, you might see one in the background somewhere, but probably not.
Yeah, because it's really just the two Jedi and then I think Lula, who's also in High Republic, but not this part of High Republic. I think those are the only Mickians that come to mind for me. But anyways, they basically go around and they steal Force artifacts, and throughout the book, mother.
They liberate Force artifacts. No, there's a difference.
Force, because that's not theft.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I said, they steal Force artifacts.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, it's exactly like Dan said. Like, they liberate them, and it's all in the name of the greater good, but it's very clear. They do a good job in the beginning of making it be like, are they evil, or are they just a bunch of misunderstood hippies? And then as the book goes farther and farther in, it becomes very clear, only stealing dark side Force artifacts. You know, they've got this like weird crystal that the mother is given by, again, I'm trying to think of a nicer word than simp.
His name?
Human simp named Radikaz Dobbs, who's like a Jedi artifact or a Force artifact smuggler, He's called Sunshine throughout the entire book. Basically, he like supplies the path with like secret hyperspace lanes because they don't have Mari Santeca.
No, actually, that's it wasn't him that did that. He brought an artifact to them because he was going to sell it to them. He just does like and transport afterwards. And finds. He doesn't do the hyperspace stuff. They get that from the what was that lady's name that you said again? From the
like, no, Mari doesn't belong to them yet.
Not yet, but they're still dealing. It sounds like they're dealing with that family still to get those hyperspace lanes.
Well, and so that's what I was gonna say because like he gets them through. We see his dealings with another Santeca. It was like Elam or something. I can't remember his name, but he basically meets a Santeca, gets a bunch of hyperspace routes off of him, and kills him.
That's right. Okay, yeah, you're right. Sorry, I forgot about that part.
Those to the mother. No worries. But yeah, so like, it turns out this is how they're doing it, you know, beforehand. They're stealing a bunch. Sunshine brings the mother this like big crystal egg, and like at first they're really playing it off as like, oh, it's this like weird dark side crystal. That's a red herring. It's an interesting red herring, but it turns out to be a leveler egg. That's the big plot twist at the end of
the original.
There's this rod. Well, and it's a weird thing because like there's this rod that she's looking for, and it's called the Rod of Seasons, and it turns out to be the I can't remember what they called it in Phase, but it's the leveler's control rod. And so basically they're trying to grow the leveler before they get the control rod, which is the interesting part. Not a
great with
plan.
The force to do that, which is like insane. It's like,
yeah, basically
she's feeding like, it her like force energy, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely comes across that way because she's very weak for the leveler, basically draining her force energy. That's like kind of the beginning of the book is the are they evil, are they not? And then Kevmo and Zala are sent to Dalna, I think is the planet that the Path of the Open Hand is on, because they receive a report from Hynestia Prime that there was a force artifact stolen. There was a force artifact that was stolen from the royal treasury of the family, and that turns out to be the Rod of Seasons, and so they basically track it to Dalna and think that it's the Path of the Open Hand. The entire middle of the book is the reason why it's labeled a young adult book.
Yep.
Because the entire
yes, there's a very common theme
book,
with these books.
The entire middle of this book is Kevmo meets Marta Rowe, and it is literally like six chapters of him being like, I really want to bang this girl, but I'm a Jedi. Yeah. And it's like, oh no, I haven't seen this for the seventh time in the High Republic now. It's like, man, I don't know. I'll talk about that later, because it's very annoying to me that this is now becoming a repeating trope within the High Republic. But yeah, like that's literally the entire middle. Is they frame it in a nice way where it's Kevmo trying to learn more about the Path of the Open Hand, you know, trying to do this like quasi like hunting down or mystery, whatever. But it's just all framed around this constant. Really is pushed very hard. And it feels very weird, especially because these are Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah. This being for young adult readers, like we're going to be having this theme in pretty much every young adult book that we get. It's kind of like Lost Stars, but not, you know, like it's got similar themes that way, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, we've seen this rodeo before.
Exactly. It's like once is neat, twice is cool, three times is a pattern, seven times is oh my god. But the last part of the book is where things get turned up to like 11, and it gets very interesting. Where basically, we were kind of joking about it earlier, but the compound gets flooded by these intense rains. Kevmo and Marta really like bond over like trying to stop these like lizard members of the path from drowning with their kids. But at the same time, Yana goes off on a mission that turns out to be a setup because she wants to leave the path, and I guess the mother has just decided that no one's allowed to leave, has to die instead. So everyone in her party, so her girlfriend and the gross McGinn, both die, and she manages to escape. Sunshine admits that the mother sent them to die.
That was a pretty gruesome death, too. Like, he gets, like, it was a Duros or whatever, throws the knife at his neck from behind when Duros is dying, like pierces his neck, and he starts gurgling and falling to the ground and like bleeding out. It's like, oh my god.
I mean, the Nautilin gets eaten by whales.
There is that as well, yes.
But she is dead already. before they eat her. But yeah, it's pretty crazy how quickly it turns up to intent, which is also important because Yana's girlfriend is daughter of the Herald, because that's going to be important in a moment. So basically, like, everything comes to a head because as Yana comes back and is like, I'm going to fucking kill the mother, Kevmo and Zala attempt to confront the mother. She unleashes the leveler because it's like born. So like the newly born leveler kills Zala, touches Kevmo. Kevmo tries to escape, runs into Marta, and basically also dies. Turns. And Marta is like, oh my god, the guy I was crushing on was killed by the mother. It's because he was really evil.
Really pissed me off.
Yeah, it's not very well set up.
Like, she is kind of brainwashed by the whole, like, cult thing, but it's like, oh my god.
It is, but, so, the thing that kind of bugged me is she has a crisis of conscience moment and realizes, yeah, I still want to be a part of the path, but maybe I don't have to do it with them. And then she sees someone she cares about dies and goes, never mind, now I'm 100% hardliner. Like, well, it would have been made more sense, actually, if she hadn't questioned herself and been like, oh, this is a test.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But, yeah, it's a little bit weird, but yeah. So basically, while that stuff is happening, Yana gets her hands on the Rod of Seasons, which means that she is now the controller of the leveler, because the mother didn't have it and everybody saw Yana with the Rod of Seasons. She's basically made into like the leveler's champion or like carer. Like I said, Marta completely drank the Kool-Aid and is now basically like the like apostle of the mother, I guess. She's like hard line, like, oh yeah, we were totally right, and like everything we're doing is for the greater good. And I'm such a force adherent that in four generations I'm gonna have a great 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 grandson who doesn't believe in the force. So you know that's gonna work out real well.
Doesn't he he believes in it, but he just doesn't want he hates the Jedi, doesn't he?
No, he just doesn't care about the force.
He just wants to like rule, and the Jedi are in his way, kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's been a like while since I've reviewed Marcion Rowe's life.
The most Marcion, because he's the last character I'm vaguely interested in. The most he cares about the Force is to use it as a weapon through the leveler against
him. Right.
And pretending to swinging around Logan Great Storm's lightsaber sometimes.
Yes, that is true. That is true.
But it also, and I think what they're trying to set up, because Marta takes Kevmo's lightsaber as like a token, and I think they're trying to set up the fact that Marcion said that he already knew how to use a lightsaber.
Be like the one that he kind of inherits, you mean?
Yeah, but it's like 150 years old, so like that's why. But yeah, so that's basically how it ends. The Aslan, the other Jedi, comes to the empty path, or yeah, Way of the Open Hand HQ at the end. Everybody's gone. He like encounters the feeling of the leveler and like realizes that Zala and Kevmo are dead and like trying to bring something back to Barry. I forgot there's a B plot that is super not important, where it's the path is building the Gaze Electric, you know, Marcion's flight.
Yeah, I was gonna bring that up.
Yeah, it's like a D plot, because we get one scene, we are told they're making it. We get one scene where Marta's talking to a bunch of kids while they're making it, and then it's built.
Yeah.
That's the entire plot arc of and it was like a pilgrim ship, but like very clearly, like the mother's like arming it, actual warship. Because the part that gets interesting is at the very end, we get to a point where, because the other thing is the mother is very clearly trying to be like, oh yeah, Yana has the rod, but like it's mine. And Yana had just previously told the Herald that, you know, the mother sent her or his daughter to go and die.
Yeah, that was, he was not happy with that for a second. And then he's like, wait, did you steal the artifact that you went to go see? It's like, really, dude? That's what you're going to go with?
Right. But so basically he interjects and is like, oh, yeah, Yana's the master, and like completely upends her plan, the mother's plan there. So we get the lines being divided. But this is part of the path of deceit. Roll credits. It's basically that the Herald and the mother are going to start having like a cold war. And the Herald is trying to stack the deck by basically telling Yana, hey, we need to kill the mother. You want revenge for, you know, your dead lover. I want revenge for my dead daughter. And also the Mickey and whatever. He's also there. And
cares about trees.
We also need to...
Nobody.
And we also need to get your cousin on board, because she could be a great replacement for the mother, because she truly does believe, unlike the mother. But, you know, you need to protect her, make sure that the mother doesn't poison her head with lies. So we're left in a good position to see how the Nihil, or the path, is going to evolve into the that is more or less the full culmination. Oh, also, Aslan is totally like, oh, something horrible happened here. And it was bad enough that I know that both Jedi are dead. That's kind of the long of it. Those are the short.
I'm excited to see them just bury these Jedi and then be like, well, nothing wrong now. Let's just move on. Or they find out what the, like, there's two options here. They do that, or they actually find out what's going on, but the evidence or the whatever happens is destroyed, and then they lose track of it for 150 years, right? But,
and that's part of my problem.
I hope they figure it out and it's destroyed. That'd be more interesting, I think.
It's just, they've already kind of written themselves into a, because the Leveler shows up out of nowhere. Nobody has any idea. There's no records. Nobody knows anything about it. And yet, in this book, we already now have a Jedi who has gone, there is something that was here that has a horrifying dark side present and has killed two Jedi. And for the Council to just be like, well, guess it was an accident, is like, well, what the fuck? Why? Are you, so you guys are already corrupted. But if they're doing the thing that you're saying, Dan, and it's like, well, we found all the evidence, and then was destroyed. It's like, well, how many people are they going to have to in order to have that happen? Now, that is, I think, I agree with you. I think that's the way that they should go, because it's the one that makes sense. But, like, man, it's, so they're going to have to kill Aslan. They're going to have to kill everybody else that he talks to.
Well, it just depends on what he figures out, if he does investigate it, or if he just passes the knowledge on and somebody else investigates it, right?
Yeah, it's like, would it be the same thing if they, like, if they introduced the Drain Gear?
No, I don't think they will.
Well, just in the same way of, you know, when Reed runs into them on the station, it's a great setup, because, like, this is something no one's ever heard before. There's no proof that they exist. No one's known about this planet until they found it.
Yeah.
You know, all this cool stuff. And yet, in this part, we already have Sunshine knows where the Leveler planet is.
That's true.
He needs to die at some point and die with all that knowledge with him, even though he already told the mother.
Yeah, and she will obviously have to die as well.
Yes, but everybody who has ever heard about this will also need to die, because otherwise, why hasn't that information
been Except for Marta.
No, even Marta. Well, they only have one Leveler.
Because Marchion found two, right? And there was more that he found. He found...
Oh, I don't remember that part.
Because remember,
remember him going through the crypt thing and finding control rod.
He found the control rod, but I believe he also found more of the eggs or whatever, because he sent, I think, was it two of them at the... the station, Starlight Station. That's when Starlight Station basically died, and the Jedi were dying left, right, and center. There was two on that ship, I believe, and then there was more that he had at the end of all that.
Okay. So, yeah, like, I guess it would make sense if Marta finds out about it and gets a couple.
It'll be interesting to see, because, like, she's now drinking the juice, right? As I said, but she might, like, if she becomes, like, the mother figure in this whole cult thing, and then
She's gonna, right?
Yeah, because she, like, buys in, and it's like, we need more of these things, and, like, kind of starts being corrupted that way.
Well, we know from the Marchion comic that her granddaughter, the head of the Nihil,
true.
Her granddaughter is, I think, Shala. Or Shayala, or something like that. But Shala Ro. And in the Marchion comic, we see Asgore kill her.
Right. And then Marchion kills his dad.
Yeah, later on. So we already know that within two generations, they have switched from the path to them. So I can't see a path going forward where Marta does not become the founder of the Nihil.
Yeah, in some regard.
Even more crazy. Yeah.
But they'll meet you with open hands, Noma.
Well, yeah, sure, they'll meet you with open hands, but I think the response, because my theory is they keep setting up the fact that Marta really wants to go to Jeddah, where they basically have this, like, coalition of Force users. And she's like, we need to go there so we can preach about the path of the open hand and, you know, let everybody know that there's a new Force vision or Force teaching that they should at least acknowledge the legitimate one. And the fact that they kept going on about how they need to acknowledge it tells me that when Marta does go to Jeddah and tells them, they're all going to be like, you're an idiot, get out of here. That's what's going to drive her to be.
And here are the levelers.
Right.
This is where they come in.
But again, that's the other thing. If they use the levelers again, it's like, well, every time they use these things, they leave scars. So how many scars have you left behind that nobody picked up on for 100?
Yeah, like, I mean, they turn into dust, right? But, like, people could assume that's like a weapon rather than find anything. Yeah.
And he just walked into a room and was like, holy shit, the dark side did something crazy here.
Yeah, that is true.
And for the Jedi to be like, oh my god, this is some fucked up dark side stuff.
I can't remember, did he say it was dark side, or did he say like there's something dark that happened here?
Fear and terror and like something terrible, like something horrible happened.
Yeah, okay.
And he knows without a shadow of a doubt that Zala's dead. And it's like, for you to consider all those things and then just be like, well, who knows? It seems like you'd only do that because the script would demand it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where the next portion of that story goes, because I'm assuming the next one that we're covering doesn't cover anything of that nature. Like, this thread doesn't continue in the next book, I don't think, but it should in the next few stories somewhere.
Yeah, hopefully. But I've also been talking for quite a while now, so Ed, how about you? Anything or any thoughts that you've got on this?
I really, really, really didn't enjoy this one. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it's because just reading it through a second time, I was not giving it any chance whatsoever. But I tend to agree with a lot of the thoughts about the leveler itself being just like, okay, yes, egg. Where'd you get the egg from? First off, it's like, you know where it's from. You know where you see what's causing it. Oh, you go and you investigate and you feel and you this. So tell somebody, at least the Jedi of the Old Republic and what we know of, I hate calling them the new middle, but prequel Jedi Council. It would have at least sent somebody to be like, oh, that's not right. What's going on? And somebody would have been like, we got to tell the council. There weren't a lot of rogues. Qui-Gon maybe would have gone looking for it for himself, but like, you tell the council, at least they can all agree to be like, okay, yeah, this isn't good. We got to do something about this. At least give them a chance to show that they can be competent in some way, shape, or form. We don't get that. At least not yet. We don't know. I'd very much like for one of the next books to have something like that.
Yeah, we're definitely going to be getting something that is going to allow us to see what the Jedi Council is going to be doing, if anything. So.
Yeah, basically all this book has done has made me want, as weird as it is, another High Republic book to clean up yet another High Republic book. You know what I mean? Like, this has left us not with questions, but with more frustrations, where it's just like, I'm going to give you a pass because you are pretty, you're a young adult's novel. You weren't there to answer a bunch of questions, but how dare you make this the first one? Because, like, you did something smart with Light of the Jedi to, here's our world building. Boom. Here's, establish this and this and this and this and this. Cool. You know where we stand for this.
And that's a big problem that I have with this being the middle and a prequel. Because I had zero attachment to Zala and Kevmo the entire book. Because in my head, I went, I've never heard of either of you. I don't remember any mentions to either of you. So as far as I'm concerned, I should just assume you're both already dead. And then as soon as they started to like hint that, oh, the leveler's going to be unleashed on them, it's like, okay, cool. I was correct.
I mean, to give credit, like, it is, I was thinking in the realms of 150 years, so if I'm not hearing, I don't know how many alien species. So I wasn't going into it.
No, sorry, that is a very good point. For some reason, I thought it was 80 years for part one. So that was the reason. It's like, well, I haven't heard of you guys. Both be old. But yeah, for 150, yeah.
Because it was like, you know what? Like, at least set something up. So set up, like, let me know who the council is. You know, who are the Jedi of this time? Are they cool? Are they not? Oh, you're just showing that. I don't know. It's like they want to make Star Wars Twilight or something. And it's I understand you're trying to write for a specific audience, but like, you come out swinging with High Republic saying it's going to be this great thing in the golden age of the Jedi, and you're going to be Twilight. It's like, this isn't what I'm here for. And like, yes, there's the comics. Yes, there's this. Yes, there's that. It's just like, this is your big phase two to show that you have some kind of plan. You have some kind of idea. It's all going to make sense. Don't worry. Well, we're still dealing with levelers and bullshit, and they're still getting away with it. Like, that's not a good look, man. You're setting up a phase three that's going to be epic, but how? Because we're leading right into prequels. Now, this book just made me angry. Not to say it's not a good book. Like, how many times have we said this about High Republic? If you're trying to figure yourself out and you're a teenager and you're looking for things, so, oh, it's just like me and people understand my problems. Yes, go ahead and read this book and you'll find something. Probably will.
The descriptive, flowery, very like in-depth emotional, kind of like detailed descriptions of what all the characters are going through is very good. I thought it was, very good writing. However, I'm so, like I said, sick of seeing this plot played out between a High Republic Jedi and, XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I keep screaming from the rafters that the only good romance that they've actually had in this entire series so far is during the Rising Storm. And it's the romance between Lina So's son and the Valo? I think it's the Valo Chancellor or Valo Senator.
Yeah, it's like the mayor's son or something.
Yeah. That's the only one that has been really good because it does not have that stupid Romeo and Juliet, like, oh, we cannot. No, our code demands that we can't. And it's like, again, once, fine. I mean, that's the fun part of Anakin and Padme. Twice? Okay. It's not unique anymore, but it's still interesting. But the fact that, like, again and again, right? Whether that's, I was going to say Lula, but Lula's not the Jedi there. Who's...
No, he's the wannabe.
Yeah, but who's the Padawan? Skeer's Padawan.
What's her name? She's the one that goes into, like, the Drangir people, mind. The Drangir's, like, dream thing.
I keep thinking it starts with a Z, but I think I'm thinking...
I will look into it. We can move on. I'll look into it.
Yeah. But yeah, like, because there was that one, and there was the Elzar one, and then there's Avar and Stellan. And it's just like, and then there's Orla and Elzin, even though that one was more played up for... Keeve Trennis, that's it. And it's just constantly over and over and over and over and over again. It's like, okay, I get it. But please.
Oh wait, no, Keeve didn't.
Yeah, you're right. That doesn't sound.
She was the only one who didn't have a romance thing. She was just trying to help Skeer.
Yeah.
When everyone else was just like, "Oh, he's a Trandoshan."
Who's the other person in that relationship that you thought?
I think it actually might be Lula. I think Lula is the Jedi.
Lula Talasola, right?
Yes. Because, it's Zine something
Marala.
Is the Mickian. Yeah, Zine Morale is the Mickey. That's what it is.
Yes, that's right.
Fucking kidding
so it,
me.
I was right. It did start with a Z. But yeah, so it's like, it's constant. It's like one after another, after another, after another. And it's like, and even, because like, Wreath has that briefly. But the fact that they don't pursue that is like, okay, cool. So we're actually breaking a trend now.
Only because she was a Nihil.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot. The tiny Nihil. But yeah, so it's just like constantly over and over and over again. It's like, come on, like, you cannot run a trope into the ground in part one. Like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
And for them to be like, cool, starting off part two with the same thing. It's like, oh no, please.
It's like, what was the plan? Just to do this?
Right.
Is the plan? Like.
And it's so strange. There's a couple of other little dregs that were at least shown as well coming in. Like I said, there is a Santeca in this. It doesn't matter because they're dead now. We do get an entire plot point that revolves around the Van Graaff family and their artifact that they don't end up getting. I don't remember there being any other like big Easter eggs, except of course they mention Hosnian Prime, and they also mention Coruscant. Outside of that, the only other ones that they do are like aliens. Like we get some Clatoonians.
Yeah, we also get oh my god, what was that species? It's the squid guy. Isn't they gonna get a few of those? I can't remember the species for some reason.
Or Natolan.
Natolan. Sorry, we had a Natolan, I think, in this.
Two Natolan. Well, three Natolans, because it's the whole Harold's family.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. So Quarns are the full squid. They're the squid face looking people. But yeah. Natolans are like Kit Fisto.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry.
Yeah. No worries. We do get some of those. There is a thing that maybe it's a thing, but like Kor is force sensitive. But that'd be a red herring as well.
What happened to Kor, Noma?
She gets shot.
She dies. So it doesn't matter anymore.
Sorry, everyone's dead except for Yana and Marta.
Yeah.
The only thing that I found kind of interesting in terms of that kind of stuff is that we are basically told that an Evereni is like multiple times stronger than a human.
Yeah, and they're like, they have like the sharp teeth and the sharp claws, yeah,
sharp
kind of teeth, thing.
Sharp nails, yeah. Nails that can puncture skin easily. Because Yana just straight up plunges her nails into someone's neck and kills them.
That was
they're made
crazy.
Out to be predators, pretty much,
and not trusted by anybody in the galaxy, which is interesting.
Yeah, and Yana, who has almost no combat experience, also breaks a human's neck like effortless.
Yeah,
so they're very strong, and that's I was like, I can see that the reason you're doing this is just so you can show. Like that Marcion is an amazing that person.
Or just even like the species itself is set up to do that, even if the person is, like Marta.
The long plan is for it to be like, oh, how can this guy without force powers go up against all these Jedi? And it's like, well, he's never ready. And
yeah, and I feel like that's fair. Like innately doing that and having, a species is a little bit more, it's stronger than a human. I think it makes sense.
Well, yeah, what I mean by that is not like, oh, it's such an asshole, but it's just like, it's a thing where it's like, I can see why you're doing it. It's the same thing as like the different way of doing it. Not that I'm saying it's a better or worse, but is the Besselisk. Dexter from Clone War or from Attack of the Clones. And then you bring in Pong Krell and you're like, well, what if he was buff and had two double-bladed lightsabers? And you're like, oh, fuck, yeah, no, I saw how big Dexter was.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This guy's fit. He's going to kill a lot.
Yeah, it's fun to when you can use some species. Like, again, this was set up for the High Republic, so like they can kind of do whatever they want with it, right?
And at the same time, right? What are maybe? Oh, it's bullshit that we have an entire race that's stronger than humans. Yeah, but the Wookiees and Trandoshans are fine because of
exactly. No, I think I think this book itself is like, it's a weird place to start this phase, but there must be a reason for it. Like, I don't know what the next book's gonna hold, but Well, I think it helps set up where, like, obviously the Path of the Open Hand, we get introduced to that because that's not something we've ever heard of before. We also get introduced...
But they're also not going to matter soon. That's the other
thing. Potentially. They may or may not, right? It depends on how the Marta and Mother situation goes. Or
except
Yana,
we don't hear anything about them in fact. And so it's the same kind of... Yeah, it's the same kind of reason where it's like, if this had been the first book... It would have still been like a little bit odd and interesting, but I would have been attached to Kevmo. I would have been like,
yeah, I wanted to see them more.
They biffed it. Yeah, right. But like because again, I got the amount of years in part one and two wrong, but that's why when I saw them, I was like, okay, cool. I'm not gonna care about you guys because you're probably gonna die by the end.
I would say 90% of the Jedi and 90% of the characters in this are probably gonna be dead by the time we get to the end of it.
Because that was the same thing with the Path of the Open Hand, where I was like, oh, look at all these free-loving people. And I was like, cool, I guess I'll be sad. Probably not when you all die at the end of this phase.
Right.
And Marta becomes the first Tempest?
Tempest Prior?
Either that or her son or daughter does.
But yeah...
Because you have some generations in between that, right? We have like
I think
grandparent, then parent, and then Marcion.
True, but I think from how on the nose they are, it's going to end up being more the first eye.
Or yeah, so at least starting the process, yeah.
But this is what gets me. It's just like, you have a book like this that, as you said, if this was this is the first book of the High Republic, it might not have pulled a lot of people into it because, oh, where's the Jedi? Where's this? Where's this? You're calling it the Golden Age of the Republic. Where's this? Where's this? You're not even starting off with Golden Republic. Kind of.
I feel like this is another situation of somebody saying, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we did, and like the plans were there, and then somebody spat in the face of everybody and Lucas and said, let's do 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Somebody with a lot of pull, and then it was just like, well, it's not going to make sense. Oh, no, but it'd be cool. And now nothing makes sense, and people aren't attached. It's like, well,
I would say we would probably run into the same problem. I mean, we haven't finished this, obviously, this phase yet, but like, if we started with this book and then we didn't get phase one first and we got this phase, I think we'd run into still the same problem of like, everyone dies. Like, why is like, this sucks. Like, everyone that we, you know, get attached to dies, especially in this first book. Like, we're attached to Kevmo, we're attached to Zala, and like, they completely biff it at the very end. They're like these, you know, Jedi helping everybody out. And then it turns into like, oh, well, they're all dead. So cool. Next book. No one to be attached to except for the bad guys. Fun.
I think we would have had different frustrations, maybe in the sense where it's just like, okay, well, the leveler killed these guys. Oh, crap. They need to do something about this. And then by Light of the Jedi, if they haven't figured it out, then we've been like, what have they been doing?
Yeah.
But it would have been a more organic progression of why the hell haven't they been doing anything. Then you can really see the decline of the Jedi into the prequel era.
Right.
Where it's just like, okay, yeah, they've been like, they've been getting worse and shit for centuries now. Not just all of a sudden on a dime. Like we've seen how they started at 100 and just fall into like negative 30
at this point.
Rather than like, well, okay, the leveler is this crazy thing that they don't know. Oh no, it turns out it's been around for 150 years. What the hell have you been doing? And now it just looks even worse, kind of thing. I don't know. It seems so off. Bad decision. I hope.
I think the heel of. Sorry, go ahead.
They give us some kind of answer as to, like, what was the reasoning behind doing phase two as a prequel. If there's not one out already, I'd love to hear the answer.
I would like to as well. I would also say, like. I feel like the ending didn't do the story that led up to it justice.
Oh yeah, the heel turn from Marta is crazy.
Oh, it's
yeah,
stupid.
That's what I was gonna say. Is like, yeah, it just turned immediately, and you're like, okay, the character development for this character just completely took a right turn.
It's
like
it's
if literally... anything, she should have doubled down and be like, I'm definitely not being a part of this. No, this is stupid.
Yeah, it's like watching Anakin's story in Episode 3, but right after they save the Chancellor. Over Coruscant, he goes, I should have known the Jedi were evil. You'd be like, I feel like I'm missing something.
Yeah. I would also say, like, even the portion where Yana, like, I understand Yana kind of getting swept up with the Leveler's Staff of Seasons or whatever it was, Rod of Seasons. I can understand, like, that surge of power for her. And how that feels, and being like, oh, everybody loves me now. Like, that's something that can, like, sway a character against their, you know, better judgment, for sure.
If she wants to change it from the inside, she'll be able to.
I mean,
you know,
I think she thinks she has more power than she, like, does. Yeah,
because
I think...
she can change it from
the inside. I think having control of the leveler is huge, because you'd be like, just kill the mother. Done. Easy. Done. Right? But obviously the mother's probably going to hire people to try and kill her or like whatever needs like happen there, like whatever the war between those two factions is going to be. I could 100% see like the mother and like the Marta situation being split into two. So like there's the path of the open hand and then the Nihil, like that's how that goes. And then Marta obviously taking Yana and the levelers and stuff that way, which would be interesting to see, like maybe the path of the open hand is still like there's a remnant of it somewhere, right? Like it could be that, or it could be many other things.
Turn into the path of four.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, like I enjoyed the like the bonding between Marta and Kevmo to the point of, you know, the Jedi seeing a different perspective, and then you know, he's a Padawan, so he's gonna like fall for like the, oh, are we not using, like, is, are we damaging the Force? Like all these questions that they're having that he hasn't really, and we haven't really looked at before in terms questions of like Star Wars canon.
Ask questions. Asking questions are fine.
Yeah.
Just like,
and Zala was really good at like guiding him through those situations where he's like, let's talk about attachment, let's talk about these things, and when you encounter them, like, it's okay to have, you know, feelings for people, but like you have to realize that the attachment is, you know, the thing that can bring you to the dark side or whatever, right? She has these conversations with him, and the guidance there is really good. So it sucks to see like all the character development that we were led up to was, you know, leveled in terms of like, there, it doesn't matter because these characters are dead now, and whatever influence they had on Marta doesn't matter anymore either. I mean, at least at the end of this book. It may come back in another book later on where Marta's reflecting on stuff because she still has the lightsaber from Kevmo. I don't see that happening based on how she reacted to everything, but it could be, right? Maybe I'm wrong. I think all in all, it's going to be interesting to see where that character goes, because if there's some sort of development with Marta where we get her, you know, falling a little bit more to the dark side, because obviously the leveler has like a dark side portion to it, and its abilities, that might be able to have a bit more enticement for the reader slash listener, I guess. I'm really hoping that is the way anyway.
I also, there was one Easter egg that shocked me. I forgot about this because I went, wait a minute, that's not right. Then I had to look it up and be like, oh my god, they changed it. So when Kevmo is talking to Marta about Jedha, he mentions that the Council of the Force that they have has a bunch of different light side organizations that are already there. And so he mentions the Guardian of the Guardians of the Wills, who are also mentioned as Order of the Open Hand founder, was from there, and then he left. But then he said the Sorcerers of Tund.
Okay.
And I went, wait a minute. They're not a light side group. They're a dark side sorcerer cabal from the Great Hyperspace War.
Maybe they're...
No, so I looked it up. Because I was like, I am not going crazy. I know that they're a dark side group. And it turns out in Legends, they are a dark side group that was established after the Great Hyperspace. In the new lore, Tund is now a light side world. They are now a light side group.
Interesting. Okay. It'll be interesting to see what the differences are there.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious.
I mean, that's cool. I didn't even know they existed before that, so cool.
Yeah, there's like a whole thing during it that is basically like the only reason that they're like ever important outside of the Great Hyperspace War, because they come up there and like a couple of times afterwards, and oh yeah, they're like the Sith, but they're not the Sith, so we can have as many of them as we want, is that like basically in the prequels there was a thing where the Jedi thought for a while that the Sorcerers of Tund were the people outing their see the future.
Oh, interesting.
And so like that helped Sidious like
pull the wool over the eyes,
kind of like take pressure off of himself. You know?
Yeah, that's interesting.
And then he kind of like looks at them and is like, nah, none of you are important enough to actually elevate Sith.
Wow, okay.
So yeah, they're not like super around in the lore, but it was a thing where I was like, I know that name.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm not going crazy. I know I'm not.
Just drop a name here and there.
Yeah.
You guys want to get into the rankings or anything else you want to say?
Yeah, I don't think so for me.
Ed?
No, I'm good. Because I'm just looking into more, trying to find reasons as to why this happened. And the authors clearly their intent was to do phase one, phase two, phase three, have you read it in that order. And I'm just like, please, please, for the love of God, as we go through phase two, makes sense. And when I say make sense, because people be like, oh, well, you let them do what they're doing so you could for the story. I'm just like, I'm trying to, but it's baffling.
Yeah.
And since there's some of the decisions, some of everything that's going on. So like, you know what? I need something drastic to happen in phase two make all the phase one things seem like, okay, maybe they took the gaze electric and just hid for 80 years at that point and then came back out of nowhere for in Light of the Jedi for the great disaster. Like, sure, if that's the case and there is no way anybody could have known anything, fine.
There's got to be something, though, yeah, to give us.
But there has to be something.
Force mind wipe.
God, can you imagine?
Yeah, honestly, I don't put it past it. I honestly don't.
I hope not. See?
Yeah. All right, well, let's get into the rankings. Welcome to the rankings of the podcast. This is where we go in and put a scale of 1 to 10. Sometimes we hit a 0.5. Sometimes we hit a 0.75. We've had that happen before. and this is the first book that we're covering of Phase 2 of the High Republic. So this one is going to be kind of like the, I guess, set point piece for this series, at least book-wise. I do kind of think, I don't know about you guys, but I do kind of think that the young reader books are kind of on a scale of their own because they're not really meant for our kind of audience. Like, usually the young reader books are a little, they rank a little lower depending on how they're done. We had Race for, like, Crash Point Tower, if you remember that one. Stuff like that. Yeah, like, they're not, they're like kind of side stories.
Yeah, I thought you were grouping this in with a young.
No, but yeah, it's like kind of like the young adult, young readers, they kind of have their own scales, and then there's the adult books, right? So it'll be interesting to see where we all, I guess, lay. But I guess I haven't started off with a ranking in a while, so I guess I'll start with mine. I'm going to give this a 6. This was, I enjoyed the understanding between Zala, Kevmo and Marta when they were like kind of going back and forth with like understanding how each person uses the Force and like that kind of discussion, because it's something that I haven't experienced yet in Star Wars, that specific stuff. A lot of the things that were kind of like the end heel turn is just like, I didn't expect this, and it wasn't like a great, you know, subverting of expectations, you know. So that sort of stuff kind of took away from it. I've listened to this book twice because I remember listening to it way before when we were gonna cover this book initially, and then we put a pause on the phase two stuff before. So listening to it again, I got a little bit more like understanding. I was like, oh yeah, I remember this sort of thing happening. I can't remember how this ends. So there was still some intrigue in terms of, you know, where things started to move, but in the end I forgot is like what happens. And that really takes it down a notch for me. It's almost like you with Not Lost Stars initially, Noma, where, yeah, you know, like the ending to you is like, what? Why? And then yeah, over time, it
sours the rest of the
book. Yeah, and over time, it kind of got better for you, I think, after reading more Star Wars and kind of coming back to it a few times. I don't think this one's going to age as gracefully, but yeah, I gave it a 6. How about you, Noma?
Honestly, I'm right there with you. I was also
okay.
Yeah, the heel turn, the Marta stuff's real, real jarring. Like I said before, I'm so sick of Jedi, forbidden love, whatever. So, like, those two really pulled it down. I get it's a young adult book. I know you gotta have relationship stuff, and come on, guys. Just if you really want to do that, just start doing it with non-Force characters, because other that couple in phase one that I was also like, yeah, this is fine, the like outer rim world protector and the smuggler.
Yeah, those guys.
I cannot remember we'll either look into of that their one. names, because it's the smuggler who isn't in a crew with Geode
on Matthew McConaughey.
I think it's the one that's the Sauna ancestor, but I might also be wrong. Staros
ancestor, yeah.
Oh yeah, sorry, Staros ancestor.
We'll have to look into that for next
time. Yeah, right. Like you've got those kinds. Like, you know, you can have your issues there. Be forbidden relationships like Rising Storm, and I think that one was like It was it Into the Dark or something? I can't, no, Into the Dark was the drink. Out of the Shadows? I can't even remember what book that was, man. Mission to Disaster? I don't remember. Yeah, like, you know, just keep the relationship things fresh. That's all I'm asking for. We've run Jedi romances into the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to do something.
Ed, how about you?
I'm honestly this guy. Not Savage. What are you doing? Come on.
A united mind.
But the only thing I think that'll be the saving grace of this whole High Republic part 1, 2, 3 saga, whatever, is that by the end of phase 3, there's nothing saying that that automatically takes it into the Skywalker saga, as they want to call it now. The prequels, for people who don't want to listen to that. So, like, because we start off at what? 250 years before?
100 years, and then this is a 150, so we're 350 prior to episode 1.
We're 350 prior, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of fucking time. I don't see how they...
I mean, in terms of Yoda's lifespan, not so much. But yes, I agree.
No, but like, it's a lot of time. And for a conflict to be going on for 350 years, like... Because realistically, the Levelers at this point been around up until what we know for the present High Republic. Right? So I just think that, like, if they're doing it, it might end and be like, okay, how many years left till... Till the prequel era. Well, you know, it's gonna be about another 150 years, and then we have more stories that they'll come up with then. If that's the case, I look differently at High Republic. But it's all up in the air.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that they give some space, because I don't see how this can go right into it anymore. I really don't. The more and more I think about it, because I don't think about High Republic enough.
That's probably a good thing at this point.
No, in the sense of, like, I haven't, like, we've been very critical of it, but I haven't combed through it seriously to be like, okay, what are the saving graces of it?
Yeah.
What are they trying to tell? What are they trying to do? I'm not giving it that chance, and I haven't given it that chance.
Right. There's stuff that we've really liked about it. You've said a few things over the course of, like, phase 1 that you really enjoyed.
And I'm trying to. And I'm trying to keep my mind open.
Like, Bell Zedifar being a character that is, like, one that we all agree on that's really good.
So far.
Yes.
So far.
Absolutely.
Let's see what the authors do. Because I guarantee there'll probably be characters in phase 2 that we actually enjoy. If we give ourselves the chance to just, again... open mind, not open hand, but open mind. Go into it and just be like, just tell us a good story. We might find some characters we really like, and that might just make us even angrier.
Let's just hope they survive enough for us to actually build a bond with the character. That's the one thing I hope they allowed us have characters that do survive this phase.
What are you talking about? I'm so happy that all my favorite characters, phase 1,
I will,
are still alive.
I will never forget the day that Orbelin died. And the reaction you had for that.
Jirani.
This is the thing I will give it, though. Like, unless they were trying to do a Game of Thrones just shock value,
yeah,
maybe. But, like, they did have characters that you did get attached to. They just took them away from you so fast.
They did.
That it was like, it filled you with rage.
And we got some really cool moments, though, with some of these characters. Like, Orbelin specifically, too, right? Like, he just, like... Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not even talking about moments at this part. It's just like, it... They were able to do that for you. So at one point, they did pull you in and they did have you ready to flow with their story. I'm stepping away. Like they said, attachment, right? Now you're not attaching yourself to characters because of the fact of what they did, which you learned a lesson. Okay. But in terms of, like, okay, you were able to do that and really affect people. That's still good. Do that. But show us that you have something. I mean, like, keep it up. Keep writing decent stories where we can... I don't feel like I don't want to get attached to, but give me a compelling character where I can't help but feel like, oh shit, like, what's going to happen? You keep snapping and turning and just killing everybody right off like that. it better be for a reason. Not just because, oh no, we're getting closer to the time where they're not going to be around. Don't use that. Let them, there's enough time to have every character have an organic, I know I keep saying organic, but like, let them have a life. Let them live, let them die in such a way. Yes, it's war, so some of them may die too early. I don't know. I'm expecting something from
Don't Red Wedding us again.
And I don't know where I expect it to come from. I don't know when I expect it to come from. I'm just keep expecting something. And every time I get to one where I'm just like, this might be, and it's not. And it's not. And like, this was one of those where it's like, okay, phase two start. Let's go. Let's do this again. Here we go again. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I keep getting strung along and I'm letting myself be strung along and I get angry that it's like, you're not leading me where I want to be led.
There's an interesting thing too with the Game of Thrones comparisons, because there is a formula to, and I don't claim to be like a master writer or, you know, wordsmith as it were, but there is a underlying theme that a lot, and I won't go into full detail here because we'll be here for another hour, but there is an underlying theme into how Game of Thrones pulls off its character death. And for, it's not universal, but for anyone who has been labeled a main or usually at least secondary character, the deaths, the shocking deaths that feel like they come out of nowhere are almost always because the character has finished their journey, or has finished the journey leading them up to the decisive moment in their life. And then when they go for it, they have misplanned something. And that misplan ends up being the crucial linchpin that undoes all of their plans and ends up with them dead. Two of the easiest examples, I guess spoilers for Game of Thrones for the next 20 seconds, if you haven't seen that and really want to see it. Like, people say that Robb Stark and Oberon Martell's deaths come out of nowhere. They don't. It's they put everything on the line, they tried to execute their plan, and they both screwed up in a way. And that's what brought them crashing down.
Yeah, and Oberyn's death is actually like very impactful. But then you get other deaths where you're just like, why? Well,
same with Robb's.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But those are the things. So it feels like it comes out of nowhere because you're like, no, wait, I'm supposed to watch you win.
And that's the normal hero story, right?
Yes. However, look at Orla.
Yeah.
Who just runs into a leveler and dies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at Orbelin. Just was on a ship and biffs it.
Space goo at that point.
Yeah, same thing with Loden, same thing with a lot of other characters. So that ends up becoming the sour taste, is that you don't even get to that excited moment of, oh, I'm about to see their character conclude. Oh, fuck, I don't get to see their character conclude.
Yeah.
It's just, I can't wait to see what this character, they're gone.
Yeah, because Orbelin had some, like, I'm not ever going to forget that character. He was such a badass for being what he was, and like, he was a very unique character. And
he's squandered.
Yeah, like they could have done so much with him. And maybe we get to see him in this, because we don't know how old he is. So we might get to see him as like a Padawan here or something, which would be interesting.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I wouldn't care if I see him.
I mean, yeah, his death sucked. But yeah, I think there's something to say for characters that are introduced and killed too early, but also to flesh out their character in the past, to give them, like, it's almost... like we're gonna get a story with like the blade of Bardotta, right? The guy that's like a cook.
But he doesn't die.
He does. You're right. He doesn't die. But we do get his like kind of backstory and his prime and all this stuff. And I'm looking forward to that because it's written by Charles Soule in a comic series. And it's relatively early on.
That's the thing for me.
Yeah.
Is if they achieved goals and then die, then yes, it's that. So for instance, that's why it's cool to read a Qui-Gon story. Because you know he achieved what he wanted to do. He just didn't live long enough to see it prosper. But he was successful. And so you then go, cool, I want to see more of this guy who tried really hard and had a unique viewpoint and ended up, you know, being tragically cut short by Darth. And that makes sense. Because, yeah, again, you've got that sense of, like, this was a successful character who did. As opposed to, this was a cool guy who threw someone through a roof and then got biffed.
Yeah, exactly. And he was kind of set up to be like, he's the archivist. And it's like, oh, okay, he's like this guy that sits in the a room with all the Jedi information. Cool. That's awesome. Yeah. And then he's like, wow, he also can do some cool stuff. And then you're like, okay, now he's dead by being shot in the back of the metaphorical head, I guess.
And he goes out with the exact same amount of fanfare as the other archivist, Maru Asala, who was there and that said some things and then just died.
Well, Maru was interesting the way he died. The way he died was better because he did it like saving people. And it was badass.
Yeah, he succeeded in the final thing he tried.
Absolutely. Whereas, so like, the final thing that Orbalin was trying to do was just keep the chip docked.
Yeah, just try to do some stuff, and then whoops. Like, well, okay.
I'm still hoping that they bring him back, and, like, yes, he got shot in the back, but, you know, I think it was Lorna D that did it, was it? Or, I think that's right.
Lorna D.
So, like, she took the ship and flew away, but it's like, what if Orbalin is not actually dead? And he just slurps around and becomes, like that. That's cool. Let's do that. Like, that'll be fun.
Then there's a path for it. But then I'm still left with Orla Jorani. Can't wait to see what you do.
Yeah.
Oh, it's shoot down Elzar Man and then die.
Oh. Yeah. All right.
High Republic.
Well, that was the Path of Deceit.
Sorry. There's something about Qui-Gon. Where I was like, there was another point I wanted. Oh, sorry, this has nothing to do with the rating system. Did you guys notice that every single Jedi in this book believed in the Living Force?
Oh yeah, I guess so.
That was something that kind of hit me near the end, and I was like, wait a minute. Every single one of you believes in something that in 150 years none of you are going to. That was kind of interesting.
And this is why I'm so concerned as to why. What was the thing that cut all this out? What happened? Because if y'all believe in this kind of stuff, like Qui-Gon's, everything Qui-Gon's saying shouldn't be new to anybody. It should be the normal. But what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't wait to get to that because there needs to be a lot of answer to that. And that's why it's what the authors are doing. It's so important that they answer those questions because if they don't, then it just looks foolish, and it looks like you're just people pleasing. Is worse for this when you're really trying to establish something.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see, but I'm already
to the next one. All right. Yeah. Well, let's jump into the outro and finish up the podcast. Welcome to the end of the podcast and the outro. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. This one was interesting. We hope to hear what you have to say about this book and possibly the beginning of phase two of the High Republic. I know we're a little late to the show, but we definitely needed the time to do so. So if you have anything that you want to let us know, Ed is going to let you know how to do that.
Absolutely. All this info and all our other episodes you can find over at voiceoftheforce.com. If you want to contact us by email, our email is voiceoftheforce@gmail.com. On social media, we are on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads for now. our handle on those are @voiceforcepod. Anything that we do read or repost that you know you find funny or insightful or informative, you can do the same, retweet or repost. And it does help with growing our listener base and is very much appreciated. You can listen, rate, review, follow, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and all major podcast platforms. Leaving us a 5-star review and a comment helps with visibility and helps that next person you tell about us find us so much easier. You can subscribe for free, and when you do, you get our latest episode notification as soon as it releases. And a quick reminder, we are on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/voiceforcegaming. Awesome, but I promise we're not chilling out. Don't worry. Might get one ad, maybe two. But please come join.
I want Voice of the Force, the flamethrower.
Yeah.
But please come join us there for some fun times and some conversation.
Thank you, Ed, and thank you, Noma. And remember, we will welcome you with open hands, always. Gifts freely given.